Usually when we talk about a medical diagnosis, there's this expectation of just mechanical precision.
Right.
Like you break your arm, the X-ray shows that jagged white line,
Yeah.
and the doctor just points and says, there it is.
Okay.
But think about the actual experience of going to the doctor in the past. You're sitting there on that crinkly paper, pouring your heart out about your symptoms, and the physician is just, well, typing furiously on a keyboard for 20 minutes.
Barely making eye contact with you.
Right. But fast forward to today, 2026. And imagine finishing that exact same appointment. Only this time, the doctor isn't acting as a transcriptionist. An AI system has been listening in, processing the context of your conversation, and it just automatically generates a structured clinical summary the second you stop talking.
It fundamentally changes the entire dynamic of the room. I mean, we are shifting from a healthcare system where the physician operates as, frankly, a glorified data entry clerk back to an environment where they can actually be a caregiver. They
Yeah.
are looking at the patient, not a screen.
And that is our mission for this deep dive. We're looking at a stack of sources detailing the 2026 landscape of generative AI in healthcare. We really want to separate the science fiction from the reality here.
Which is very necessary.
Yeah, looking at the incredible benefits, but also the very real risks of relying on this technology in, life or death environments.
And that's a critical distinction to make right up front because the term AI gets thrown around as a catch-all.
Oh, absolutely.
But the systems running clinics today, they're operating on entirely different mechanisms than the tools we had even, 5 or 10 years ago.
Okay, let's unpack this because I think people still get confused between what AI used to be and what generative AI is today. The way I try to visualize traditional AI is it's like a highly advanced appraiser evaluating a house.
Okay, I like that.
You feed it data, right? Square footage, neighborhood comps, age of the roof.
Yeah.
And it gives you a fixed value based on past data. It predicts or classifies.
Right. It looks at a scan and flags a risk. It says, this is what this is.
Exactly. But generative AI seems more like an architect.
Yeah.
It doesn't just appraise what's already there. It looks at past houses to draw blueprints for a house that has never existed before.
Right.
It creates entirely new content, whether that is a drafted medical report or a totally customized explanation for a patient.
That analogy captures the shift perfectly. Traditional AI deals in very specific structured tasks, but generative AI works with incredibly messy, diverse, unstructured inputs.
Like what?
Well, we were talking about casual spoken conversations, complex medical histories, varied imaging formats, handwritten doctor's notes, even.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it synthesizes all of that chaos into something actionable. But to understand how this architect, builds these new outputs without making catastrophic medical mistakes, we really have to look at the four-stage process happening under the hood.
Because it's not magic.
No, not at all.
There's a very rigid mechanical process keeping this thing on the rails.
Exactly. So stage one is data input. The AI receives the raw material. This could be the patient's genetic history, their recent lab results, the spoken conversation happening in the room, or even real-time vitals from a wearable device.
Which brings up a massive challenge, right?
Yeah.
If you just dump all that raw data into an AI and ask for a diagnosis, how does it know what standard of care to apply?
Right, that's the big fear.
I mean, my instinct is that if it just pulls from the open internet, it might suggest some bizarre home remedy it found on a random blog.
Yes, and that exact fear is why stage two is the cornerstone of modern healthcare AI. It's called context retrieval.
Okay.
Most clinical systems today utilize a framework called retrieval augmented generation, or RAG for short.
RAG, yeah, I saw that in the sources.
Right. So rather than relying on the vast unfiltered internet, RAG forces the AI to operate within a walled garden.
I see.
Before it even attempts to generate a response, the system searches a dedicated, highly secure database. We're talking verified medical guidelines, peer-reviewed literature, and the patient's specific electronic health record.
So it basically tethers the AI to actual medical science before it's even allowed to speak.
Exactly. It retrieves that factual, verified context first, which leads right into stage three, which is generation.
Okay.
The AI processes the raw input from stage one, applies the verified medical context it just retrieved in stage two, and then it synthesizes a new output.
So it could be like drafting a radiology report.
Yes, or suggesting a next step for treatment, or even translating complex medical jargon into a summary a patient can actually understand.
And then we hit the safety net, stage four.
Right. Stage four is human review. And in healthcare, this is legally and ethically non-negotiable.
Yeah, we hope so.
A qualified doctor or healthcare professional must evaluate and approve the AI-generated output before it impacts patient care in any way.
Right.
The AI acts as a sophisticated analytical engine, but it does not possess medical judgment, empathy, or legal accountability.
So input, retrieval, generation, review.
You got it.
So we know the mechanics of how it processes information, but I really want to move from the theory to the real-world clinic of 2026. Like, how does this shift the actual patient experience?
It's a huge shift.
Because our sources point to two major technological leaps that have made these four stages practically invisible to the patient. Multimodal AI and AI agents.
Yes, those concepts are really the twin engines driving clinical adoption right now.
How so?
Well, multimodal AI means the system is no longer confined to just text. It processes text, visual data, and audio streams simultaneously.
Wait, really? All at once?
All at once. It can process the sound of a patient's raspy cough, analyze the visual anomalies in their lung x-ray, and cross-reference their written medical history at the exact same time.
Much like a human doctor does.
Exactly.
And the second leap, AI agents. That takes it from just thinking to actually doing right.
Precisely. An AI agent doesn't just answer a single prompt. It's capable of executing complex, multi-step workflows.
Give me an example of the difference.
Sure. If you ask a standard chatbot to book a follow-up, it might just give you a link to a calendar.
Right.
But an AI agent will check the doctor's availability, cross-reference it with the patient's schedule, send the booking request, update the electronic health record, and automatically draft a preparatory lab order for the patient to complete before the visit.
Oh, wow. It's doing all the busy work.
Exactly.
Let's actually put this into practice. Let's trace a patient journey to see these multimodal agents in action, because the sources highlight about 10 distinct applications that string together to form this new standard of care.
Okay, let's do it.
Let's say I'm the patient. My interaction with this system actually starts long before I ever sit in a waiting room, doesn't it?
Often, yes.
Yeah.
It begins with remote patient monitoring. So you might be wearing a smartwatch or a continuous glucose monitor.
Yeah, I've got my watch on right now.
Right. And the AI isn't just recording static numbers. It is analyzing time series data.
Meaning
it's looking for subtle trends. Say, a slight but persistent degradation in heart rate variability over 2 weeks.
Something a human might not notice until it becomes a full-blown crisis.
Exactly. If it spots a concerning pattern, the system flags it and prompts an intervention right then and there.
Okay, so my wearable catches a weird heart rhythm, and I set up a telehealth appointment. Before the doctor even joins the video call, an AI assistant has already run me through an intake protocol. It collected my patient-reported symptoms, analyzed that weird heart rhythm data, and summarized the entire situation for the doctor.
So you're not starting from zero.
Right. And the doctor isn't spending the first 10 minutes just getting up to speed.
The clinician is fully prepped, maximizing the value of that face-to-face time. And during that visit, whether it's virtual or in person, we see the impact of that multimodal capability we discussed earlier through medical documentation.
Oh, the AI scribe.
Yes. The AI scribe listens to the natural flow of the conversation.
Wait, if it's listening to everything, how does it know the difference between me complaining about, you know, the traffic on the way to the clinic and me complaining about sharp chest pains?
That's the beauty of it. The models are trained specifically on clinical contextual filtering.
Okay.
They understand the semantic difference between small talk and diagnostic criteria.
So it just ignores the traffic rant.
Exactly. The system filters out the noise about the traffic, focuses on the chest pain description, categorizes the severity based on your tone and words, and maps that into structured clinical notes in real time.
That's wild. The paperwork essentially does itself while the physician remains entirely focused on you.
Yeah, it's a game changer for the doctor-patient relationship.
Okay, so the AI has summarized my telehealth visit and taken the notes.
Yeah.
That's a massive win for reducing administrative burnout, obviously.
Huge.
But a summary doesn't cure me. What happens when we need to figure out what's actually wrong? Let's say the doctor orders an MRI based on my chest pain.
This is where we move into medical diagnosis and imaging. The AI acts as a first read radiology assistant.
Okay.
When the MRI scan comes in, the AI analyzes the pixels against millions of historical scans.
But it doesn't just say, this looks abnormal.
All right. No, it goes way beyond that. It highlights specific regions of interest, calculates the volume of a potential anomaly, and drafts a preliminary report detailing why it flagged those specific areas.
It's doing the heavy lifting of pattern recognition to basically tee up the ball for the human expert.
Exactly. And it applies that same pattern recognition to clinical decision support.
How does that part work?
Well, the system takes the radiologist's confirmed findings, your genetic profile, your lifestyle factors, and the verified medical guidelines pulled via RAG, and it instantly models out possible diagnoses.
Which leads right into personalized treatment, because it can hold all of those complex interacting variables in its working memory simultaneously.
Right.
So it can suggest a treatment plan tailored specifically to how my unique genetics might react to, say, a specific beta blocker, rather than just suggesting a generic one-size-fits-all prescription.
It brings precision medicine down to the level of standard primary care. It's incredible.
All right, so the visit is over. I've got my personalized treatment plan. But the system doesn't just turn off when I leave the building, does it?
No, it doesn't.
This brings us to the after phase, which relies heavily on patient chatbots. Like, I get home, the adrenaline of the doctor's visit wears off, and I realize I have absolutely no idea if I'm supposed to take this new medication on an empty stomach or if it interacts with my daily multivitamin.
Right. Happens all the time. And historically, you would have to call a clinic, wait on hold, and pull a nurse away from another patient to answer a routine question.
But now?
Now, you interact with a specialized AI chatbot integrated directly with your health record. It can explain your specific discharge instructions in plain language.
But what if something's actually wrong?
That's the crucial part. If your question indicates a worsening symptom, like if you tell the chatbot, I took the pill and now my chest feels tight again, the system's logic pathways are designed to immediately escalate that interaction to a human triage nurse.
That's reassuring. Meanwhile, back at the hospital, the administrative automation is quietly executing those multi-step workflows we talked about earlier.
Oh, yes. The billing side.
Right. It's not just drafting a letter. An AI agent is breaking down the complexities of an insurance claim. It verifies the billing codes against the clinical notes, checks my specific coverage policy, formats the submission, and sends it off.
It completely eliminates the repetitive bottlenecks that used to just choke hospital billing departments.
Yeah.
But what's fascinating here is that while all of this is revolutionizing the day-to-day operations of the local clinic, generative AI is simultaneously rewriting the fundamental rules of medical research and drug discovery on a global scale.
Yes. This blew my mind in the research. The sources emphasize that traditional drug discovery usually takes decades of slow, super expensive trial and error in a lab.
Right. You test a compound, it fails, you try another one.
It's basically guessing and checking.
It is incredibly inefficient. But generative AI flips that paradigm. Because these models understand the complex language of chemistry and biology, researchers can actually ask the AI to map chemical properties in a latent space.
What does that mean in practical terms?
Essentially, the AI can propose entirely new molecular structures that have never existed in nature.
Wow.
Yeah. It can predict how those novel compounds will bind to specific protein targets in the body and even predict potential toxicity all before anyone ever picks up a test tube.
So it narrows down the haystack to just a few glowing needles.
Exactly. It doesn't replace the need for physical clinical trials, obviously, but it completely turbocharges the front end of the discovery process.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
We've just outlined a system that can continuously monitor my vitals, instantly summarize my medical history, draft flawless clinical notes, highlight anomalies in my MRI, design a personalized genetic treatment plan, manage my insurance claims, and invent the molecular compound that might cure me.
It's a lot, yeah.
So if the AI can analyze a patient's entire physiological profile faster and more comprehensively than a human brain ever could, shouldn't we just let it make the final medical decisions? Like, why add the friction of a human doctor at all?
I get that. The efficiency gains make that a very tempting thought experiment.
Right.
But the reality is a definitive, absolute no. The technology is a collaborator providing clinical decision support. The moment you remove the human from the loop, you expose patients to unique dangers inherent in how these models actually function.
Tell me about those dangers.
First and foremost, we have to look at AI hallucinations.
I hear this term a lot, but in a medical context, what does a hallucination actually look like? Why does a machine that can do advanced chemistry suddenly just make things up?
Well, because at their core, large language models are prediction engines.
Okay.
They are optimizing for linguistic plausibility, determining which word sounds most natural next. They aren't optimizing for factual, clinical truth.
Even with that ROG constraint we talked about.
Even with ARG. If the system encounters a gap in its data or a highly unusual combination of symptoms, it might confidently generate a response that sounds totally authoritative but is factually incorrect.
I see.
In a creative writing tool, a hallucination is a funny glitch. In healthcare, hallucinating a non-existent tumor on a scan or hallucinating a safe interaction between two deadly drugs is lethal.
The model doesn't know what it doesn't know.
Exactly.
Which makes stage four human review the only thing standing between hallucination and the patient.
Precisely. And furthermore, we have to examine the mechanics of bias.
Right, because AI models learn from historical data.
Yes. So if the clinical trial data used to train the system disproportionately focused on, say, middle-aged men of European descent.
Which a lot of historical data did.
Exactly. The AI will learn the statistical realities of that specific demographic.
So if a woman from a different ethnic background presents with symptoms of a heart attack that differ from the quote-unquote classic male presentation,
the AI might completely misinterpret the data because it just wasn't trained on those specific physiological markers.
So flawed training data mechanically guarantees flawed clinical outputs.
Right. The AI isn't maliciously biased. It simply reflects the gaps in the medical history it consumed.
The quality of the output is entirely dependent on the quality of the data.
Exactly.
But that brings up a massive paradox when it comes to data privacy and regulatory compliance.
It's the biggest hurdle.
Because medical information is the most sensitive data a person has.
Oh.
Researchers desperately need millions of diverse, comprehensive health records to train these models so they don't hallucinate and don't have demographic biases.
Right.
But you can't just hand over millions of private, identifiable patient files to a tech company.
No, you absolutely cannot. It creates a severe bottleneck for innovation. You need data to make the AI safe, but sharing the data is inherently unsafe.
Which brings up one of the most brilliant solutions mentioned in the sources, synthetic medical data.
Oh, it is a remarkable technical achievement. It really resolves that exact paradox.
The way it works is fascinating. The AI doesn't just copy and paste real patient files and, like, cross out the names.
No, no.
It studies the deep statistical relationships in millions of real records. It learns, for instance, that a 45-year-old with a specific blood pressure and a certain genetic marker has a 12% chance of developing a specific metabolic condition.
Right.
And then it uses its generative capabilities to create entirely new, totally fictitious patient profiles.
These synthetic patients do not exist. They have no names, no social security numbers, and no real-world identities whatsoever.
But mathematically, they represent the exact statistical realities of the real world.
Yes.
So researchers get the massive, diverse data sets they need to train unbiased models, and the privacy of real human beings is completely protected.
It allows the medical field to rigorously test, validate, and train AI systems across countless variables without ever triggering a privacy violation. It's brilliant.
So what does this all mean? Like, if you're our listener right now, someone wants to understand how to actually navigate this 2026 landscape, how do you adapt?
Well, AI isn't a fad. It is the new infrastructure.
Right.
It's not replacing doctors. It's collaborating with them.
Mm.
So the required skill set has evolved significantly beyond pure rote memorization of anatomy and standard protocols.
What kind of skills are we talking about?
There is a growing demand for hybrid technical skills.
Mm.
Understanding Python and AI development frameworks gives professionals the ability to actually build and tweak these tools rather than just passively consume them.
But even for the non-programmers, like the nurses, the administrators, the sources heavily emphasize prompt engineering.
Oh, absolutely.
And they make it very clear that prompt engineering isn't just, you know, asking the AI nicely to do something.
No, it is a highly specific skill. It is about understanding how to structure clinical constraints into the AI's logic flow.
Like framing the question right.
You have to know how to frame a query so that the model doesn't deviate from standard care protocols. System knowledge is also paramount.
Right. Understanding the RAG stuff?
Yes. You need to understand the mechanics of RAG so you know when a system is pulling verified data versus when it might just be guessing. You have to understand how these AI agents integrate with legacy electronic health record systems and comply with strict data standards.
But beyond the technical specs and the system integrations, the sources highlight one soft skill above all else.
critical thinking.
Yeah.
Because of the inherent risks we detailed, the hallucinations, the hidden biases, the statistical gaps, AI-generated information must be relentlessly questioned.
You can't just blindly trust it.
Exactly. The human in the loop must possess the clinical reasoning skills to look at a beautifully formatted, highly confident AI output and ask, does this actually make medical sense for the unique, complex human being sitting on the exam table in front of me?
Yeah.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the ultimate value of all this technology, all this data processing, and all these new skills is not about turning healthcare into a factory assembly line.
No.
It is about time.
That's the real currency here.
The future of healthcare is about AI agents taking over the multi-step, soul-crushing administrative burdens that have burned out an entire generation of medical professionals.
The goal of automating the paperwork, the preliminary image analysis, and the data retrieval is to literally give doctors and nurses their hours back, time to actually sit down, look the patient in the eye, and listen to them again.
To focus on empathy, nuance, and the complex, edge case medical decisions that require genuine human judgment.
We're looking at a technological shift that reduces admin work, gives us a massive head start on complex diagnoses, and turbocharges drug discovery, all while keeping human accountability firmly at the center of the wheel.
Right.
It's not about the machine replacing the human. It's about the machine absorbing the busy work so the human can be more human.
Which is really the most optimistic and realistic path forward for modern medicine.
But as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to pull on a thread we touched on earlier, because it sparked an idea that goes slightly beyond where we are sitting today in 2026.
Okay, what's that?
We talked about the mechanics of synthetic medical data, how the AI generates millions of fictitious patient profiles that act exactly like real populations, purely to train models safely.
Right.
If these systems are becoming so incredibly advanced at generating entirely synthetic, biologically and statistically accurate human populations, could these virtual synthetic patients eventually be used to predict entirely new medical conditions or foresee dangerous drug interactions before they ever happen to a single living, breathing human being?
Wow, that raises an important question.
Something to mull over the next time you're sitting in the waiting room.